All right, guys, I have here today with me, I'm very excited because I have one of the OGs of speaking and selling from the stage, and that's Terrence Dunn. He has been doing this since 2006, all right? So this is almost 20 years, almost two decades, and he has been teaching marketing and investing. He is a digital entrepreneur, investor, a speaker, a coach, and mentor, and he has his hands in several businesses. And I must say he's one of the best-looking guys who does webinars at the moment. You know, whenever I see his ads on YouTube, I'm going, such a, you know, gift from God kind of thing, you know. And you know, I'm not gay, by the way, so but I just think he's really good-looking. And he shared the stage with the likes of, like, Mary Buffett, Blair Singer, Jay Abraham, just to name a few of them, right? So we're very privileged today to have Terrence Dunn with us, not to be confused with me, Terrence Tam. We share this almost similar name, very similar name, almost the same. And that probably explains why we're both so good looking, right? So, Terrence, exactly. Welcome. Welcome hey. To Founders Go Naked.
Hey, Terrence. Thanks for having me here. Really, really very excited and really very privileged to be here, you know, to be on your session. Thank you so much for the invitation. And thank you so much for the wonderful introduction as well.
Okay, I hope I didn't miss anything because I'm sure you've done more than what I just explained just now, right?
All good. Yeah.
All right, Terrence, let's start with a few fun questions just to, you know, get the ball rolling. Who's your favorite person in the world? Now, let's assume your wife is not listening to this, all right?
Who's my favorite person in the world? Religion is actually something that's very important to me. And I don't want to get into any religious inclinations or any religious debates, etc. But for me, I always believe that everybody has a supreme being in their lives, regardless of what's your faith and what's your religion. And for me, God in my religion is actually the most important person in my life, because I always believe that whatever I do, I actually want to make sure that there's a higher purpose in it. There's a guiding principle. And, you know, religion is something that really guides me along that path. And whenever I make the decisions, whenever I decide on what to do for my community, I always like to say a little prayer just to make sure that I'm actually doing the right things. And a lot of times that helps so much. So I would say that God is the most important person in my life.
Wow, that's very nice. I like that. And what is your favorite Netflix show, Terrence?
My favorite Netflix show? I mean, there are so many, but I'm somebody that kind of like, for lack of a better word, I love kind of like war movies. Yeah. Oh. So I love a lot of, like, you know, war movies. Like, I'm not sure whether you have watched movies like Fury, which was a very, very good war movie. About tank fights. Yeah. Then there was 1917. There was All Quiet on the Western Front. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, any movies that are related to World War II or World War I, like even Midway, you know, that was really awesome as well. Pearl Harbor was awesome as well. Yeah. So I'm somebody that enjoys such movies, and it helps that my two sons actually love these movies as well. So we always make it a kind of like a family affair when we watch all these movies together.
How old are your two sons, by the way?
I'm actually 21, as you can tell. Are you asking about me or my two sons?
Yeah, well, your two sons, actually.
Oh, my two sons. I thought you were asking about me. Okay, so my two sons, one is actually 11 this year, one is 13 this year.
Okay, so that's not too violent for them, of course, you know, losing limbs and all that stuff.
No, because I kind of like pre-frame them before I let them watch it, because I always tell them that these are things which happened in the past.
True.
And it's always important for them to know what happened in the past. And always preframe them that, yes, there's going to be gore involved. There's going to be, you know, violence involved. But we need to understand things that happened in the past to avoid, you know, things to happen in the future as well. So that's how I preframe them before I actually let them watch the movie. So they understand that when they are watching the movie, it's about learning about history as well. I think that's something which is important. Yeah.
I hope they're getting A's in history class.
Well, my elder one loves history. Yeah.
Nice. And Terrence, what's your favorite hobby?
My favorite hobby? Honestly, my favorite hobby is really getting a really good book and then finding a quiet place and just chilling out and, you know, reading that book. because I find that in the hustle and bustle of my daily business, whatever I'm doing for my businesses, sometimes it's really very difficult to find like that quiet moment for myself. So whenever it's possible, I really just like to, you know, get my favorite book, find a nice cafe and really just read up and really just catch up on my reading, sipping on my favorite latte.
What kind of books do you read?
Anything to do with business, anything to do with entrepreneurship,
right?
Anything to do with personal development, yeah.
Right, right. So it's not one of those romance kind of novels that you read?
No, unfortunately not. That's why my wife is always complaining that I'm not romantic enough.
You maybe should pick up one or two of her books.
maybe I should.
Okay, final question. Yeah. Who is your favorite guru?
I mean, I have quite a number. I like Dan Lok a lot. Dan is actually somebody that I really, really admire. One of the reasons is because he's also Asian, and he really embodies the kind of successful icon of how an Asian can really be at the top of his game. And, you know, Dan has been around for really many, many years, but yes, he has maintained a very consistent branding. He's very well known in his field expertise. He's very good at platform closing. He's very good at, you know, doing high ticket sales. Yeah. So he's somebody that I feel is really at the top of his game, and he's somebody that I really admire.
Nice, nice. And I guess one of the cool things about him is that he doesn't really speak with a perfect accent, but somehow he just is really popular.
Exactly, yeah. And I think that also comes from the fact that he's very authentic. He doesn't try to, like, you know, speak with a perfect English, like what you said. He's basically just like, for lack of a better word, this is who I am. If you like me, come join me. If you don't like me, then, you know, go someplace else.
Yeah.
So he's really authentic.
He'll probably use the F word there, but yeah, you're very polite because you're a man of God.
Exactly. I believe he does.
So Terrence, we'd like to find out, tell us more about, you know, your whole journey, how you got started, you know, where you came from and how you got to where you are today. I'd love to hear the story.
So my journey was kind of like a little bit different from other people. So I graduated from Nanyang Technological University in Singapore, and I studied mechanical engineering. Yeah. And after that, I worked for one of the largest government-linked engineering companies in Singapore. But after a year, I kind of like realized that working in the corporate world wasn't for me. You know, I was working like really long hours. Literally, by the time I came back home at night, I was so tired that I didn't even bother bathing. I'll just crash on my floor. I wouldn't even go to the bed. And in the morning, I'll just shower and go back to work again. Yeah, and it was supposed to be Mondays to Fridays, but I found myself going back to work on Saturdays and Sundays as well. So after a year, I kind of like told myself, you know, heck, I shouldn't be using this word on this podcast, but that was really how I felt at a point in time. So I told myself that this isn't the life I wanted. I didn't want to have my life subject to approval, and I decided to fire my boss. Yeah, but there was just one small issue. At a point in time when I fired my boss, I didn't actually have a backup plan. I didn't know what I was going to do next. And, you know, kind of like I was asking myself, should I go and look for another job? But if I went to look for another job, it's just like jumping from one hole to another hole. So at a point in time, I asked myself, what was it that I really wanted? And I realized that I wanted a breakthrough. At a point in time, you know, believe it or not, I was actually a very introverted person. I was really very shy. I didn't really dare to speak to other people. And I was very, very much somebody I kept to myself. And I realized that, you know, the breakthrough I needed was to come out of my shell. The breakthrough I needed was to actually be able to speak to more people and speak to people on a one-to-many basis and not just on a one-to-one basis. And it so happened that I was looking at all the different careers that would help me to be able to do that. And I decided to go into something that I think a lot of people would actually frown upon, which is multi-level marketing or network marketing. Yeah. So I went into a Singapore-based multi-level marketing, and within a short span of 2 years, I built my team to actually one of the largest in the company. We did about $20 million in sales. We had like teams around the whole entire region. Yeah. But, and on a fateful day, what happened was that the company actually, due to some mismanagement of funds, the company actually couldn't pay us commissions and they had to actually close down. Yeah. And I remember that was actually a very devastating time for me because at the point in time, I was very much a spender. So everything was like on credit cards. I didn't bother saving, etc. So when the company actually closed down, I was actually pretty much in a rut. And I was literally just one step away from bankruptcy. Yeah. So that kind of was like a defining moment for me. It's not easy for me to say this, you know, on this session, but I just want people to know that a lot of times when you see somebody that's successful, you may not see the kind of journey he has gone through. Mm. Most people, when I do my workshops, my boot camps or my webinars, I just tell people that none of them have actually seen the days where I was literally eating cup noodles outside of 7-Eleven, you know, when it was actually a rainy night. Yeah, nobody has ever seen that. But that's the kind of journey that a lot of people have taken to get to where they are today. And I went through that as well. Anyway, to cut a long story short, I discovered about digital marketing. I dive really head on into it, immerse myself into it. And I was really fortunate because I actually had a couple of friends I got to know. They were actually owners of forex brokerages. They were owners of financial institutions. And they actually shared with me about a niche that was really mind-blowing to me. They shared that it was actually possible to actually become an affiliate for financial institutions. It was actually possible to become an affiliate for forex brokerages. And, you know, they showed me the ropes. They showed me what was possible. They showed me the kind of income that was actually possible. I still remember that was like more than 10 years ago. This friend of mine, he owns a forex brokerage and he showed me that his top affiliate in Malaysia was making about $1 million per year. So remember 10 years ago, $1 million per year was probably like worth quite a lot of money.
Yeah.
So that made me realize that this was actually a niche I should take a serious look at because digital marketing is so wide. There's so many things to actually look at. And even if we narrow down into affiliate marketing, there's still so many niches. But I realized that this was a niche that was very much unexplored. Not many people know about it. And even if people know about it, they don't know how to actually run this business proficiently. So I really, really focused on it. And, you know, I'm really blessed that all these mentors in my life have helped me. And today, you know, I actually help brokers to train their affiliates. I consult for them. You know, I'm actually a partner of many brokerages. I've even taken stakes and shareholdings, equity stakes in some brokers as well. Mm-hmm. So at this point in time, I really just want to be able to give back to other people. I want to help other people just like how my mentors have actually helped me as well.
Nice. So it's this whole journey we talk about in like 5 minutes was probably what, 20 years
together?
Almost.
Thereabouts. Yeah.
Okay. So I think I like to kind of like dive a little into when there were a few turning points, in my opinion, right? First of all, when you decided to quit your job, that was one huge turning point. Second turning point, when the MLM company you were working for collapsed, right?
Yeah.
So the transition from one thing to another, you transitioned at least twice there from what you've told us just now, right?
Yeah.
How do you make that transition from, like, first of all, being... I think, you know, having that stable job income to going to MLM, which, you know, probably your relatives, your parents probably would have frowned upon. And exactly. Think, what the hell are you doing, dude? Well, you are a trained engineer. What are you doing MLM? Yeah. Right. So it's not just the financial part, but also the social part as well. Right. So tell us how you transitioned for the first one first, you know.
Well, honestly, when I first decided to transition from engineering to MLM, when I told my parents about it, they literally threw a fit. You know, I was on the verge of being disowned, as you can imagine. To them, I was like kind of like wasting my engineering degree. You know, they didn't send me for like how many years of studies, like from primary school to junior college, university. That's probably like 6 + 4, 10, 12, yeah, like literally 16, 17 years of education just for me to go into MLM. So they literally threw a fit. And I still remember at a point in time, I very calmly told them, I say, Mom and Dad, I fully understand how you're feeling because if I was in your position, I would feel that way as well. But you know what? Just give me a chance. Give me 3 to 6 months And in 3 to 6 months, if I don't show you any results, then I agree that I would go back into the corporate world. I will look for a stable job again. And that kind of like resonated with them because they realized that I was still rational. I wasn't like, you know, on the verge of being totally immersed into it. I was like, not at a point of no return. So they said, okay, they will give me that 3 to 6 months. And that 3 to 6 months, I really worked very, very hard. And I built my income to the five-figure point, which was many, many times what I used to make as an engineer. And, you know, I actually showed them my results and they gave me the blessings after that. Yeah.
Okay. So I think one of the key things is like, if you decide to transition, you really have to focus and go full on, work hard and just make things happen. Right.
Yeah. I always tell my community members that the difference between try and triumph is just a little oomph. In other words, if you actually want to be successful in something, don't just try. You know, if you want to go for something, just go all out for it. Because if you're going to try it, you're probably not going to get the results that you want. Yeah. Mm. So that's the difference between what we call business income and hobby income. Mm. If you treat it like real business, you get business income. If you treat it like a hobby, you're just going to get hobby income.
Now, how do you know if someone is just trying versus someone who is like, I guess, really committed to it? Like, what are some of the telltale signs?
Well, if I take it from the context of my mentees and my community members, I would say that for the people that are really committed, they are literally bugging me every single day. They are showing me what they're doing, asking for their opinion. They're taking the initiative. Mm. And they always have a very positive mindset. Mm. They believe that it's not how many times you fail, but it's how many times you manage to pick yourself up. Mm. Because I've always told my community members that in this world, there's no such thing as only failure. There's only this thing called temporarily giving up. So as long as you don't give up, you will never experience failure. But there are a lot of people that after one or two times, you know, they kind of don't get the results that they want. They just decide, you know what, this is not for me. I'm going back to my comfort zone. Mm. So yeah, those that really are committed, they go all out. You can actually tell. Whereas those who are trying, they'll just maybe try it once or twice. After that, they'll tell you, you know what, this is not for me. You know, Terrence, I don't have the time for this. Terrence, I think this is not for me. Yeah. And yeah, it's pretty obvious. You can tell the difference in the kind of mentality, the kind of mindset. And sadly, it also shows in the end results as well.
Yeah. Mm. So when you make that transition yourself from engineer to MLM, how do you know, were you trying or were you committed to it?
And how do you know? I was very committed.
All right.
I was very committed. From the fact that, you know, when I was building my business right from the get-go, I was really putting in all the hours. I was actually waking up early in the morning, building my business all the way till late at night. Mm-hmm. And some of you might be wondering, but wait, Terrence, isn't that the same when you were an engineer? Well, the difference was that as an engineer, I was building somebody else's business. Mm-hmm. But when I was actually doing my MLM business, I was building my own business. Mm-hmm. So there is a difference when you are working hard to build somebody else's business and somebody else's dreams versus working hard to build your own business and your own dreams. That's a big difference in that.
Mm. Yeah, and I think it's the energy that you bring into the venture is also so different, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about when you transition, you know, you got really successful in MLM and then the company went bust. And then you had all this like maybe spending habits that were like, you know, luxurious lifestyle spending habits. I don't know were you buying Jimmy Choo shoes or something like that?
Whatever you can think of. Yeah. The pen had to be Mont Blanc. You know, my clothes all the way from top to bottom were all branded, all the Italian branded names you can think of. Everything was branded. Yeah.
All right. So from that point, I mean, sometimes it's actually harder to transition when you have that high spending habit already, right? And then you kind of like, oh, I have to lower my lifestyle. That is sometimes tougher than going like from zero and then you're scraping it kind of thing. So tell us a little bit about that situation and how you overcame it.
Honestly, it wasn't easy because at a point in time, you're right, I had to do a total shift in my lifestyle. I had to go from, you know, really spending on big ticket items to watching every single cent that I was actually spending on. It didn't help that at a point in time because of the fact that I didn't have any savings. Banks were actually knocking on my doors. Credit card companies, they closed my cards, they closed my credit lines. You know, it became so bad that I literally had to make arrangements with all the banks to actually be on this thing called the debt relief plan, where every month I had to pay a certain amount of money back to the banks. And if I were to ever default any of the monthly payments, they would put me into bankruptcy. Yeah, so I was that close to being bankrupt. And you know, that really was a turning point in my life, because I asked myself this question, Terrence, how much longer do you actually want to be in this state? And I realized one very important thing. I realized that it's all in the mind, because if I could actually transition from being an engineer to building up my business in MLM, I can always transition into something else. And that's where I started to look for other things to do. And one of the things which I realized that I had a passion for when I was actually doing my MLM business was I really, really love speaking. I love, you know, public speaking. I love actually doing training. Yeah. And it was actually at that point in time that I'm very grateful for another mentor in my life. Most of you probably know him. His name is Richard Tan. He's actually the founder and the CEO and the boss of this company called Success Resources. So Success Resources have brought in all the top speakers in the world, people like Anthony Robbins, Jay Abraham, you know, ex-president Bill Clinton, Obama, Donald Trump. They've brought in so many luminary speakers. So I went to Richard and asked Richard, like, you know, Richard, can I actually do all your previews for you? Can I do all your sales events for you? And, you know, I'm really grateful that Richard gave me the opportunity, because I really learned so much from him. He's really the grandmaster when it comes to the seminar industry. And he really shared so many things with me. If not for him, I wouldn't have the kind of speaking skills that I had today. If not for him, I wouldn't have the kind of stage exposure which I have today. So I really am thankful for him, because I always believe that our lives are always shaped by the books that we read, you know, the movies that we watch, and the people that we actually are mixing around with. And I'm really blessed that I've got so many mentors and so many angels in my life. And, you know, if not for these people, I really wouldn't be where I am today. And I really wouldn't have the kind of results that I have today. So really grateful to people like Richard, who gave me opportunities back then to be able to speak from the stage, to be able to actually sell from the stage, to be able to do platform closing. And that really helped me to build my foundations very well.
Nice, nice. Hey, sorry, Terrence, to disrupt the flow a bit. The sound that is coming through, it's kind of like a bit off and on a little bit. Like it goes really low a little bit. The sound.
It's a what?
The sound that's coming through on your side.
You mean it goes low?
Yeah, it goes low. Yeah.
Strange. I didn't do anything to the volume of my mic. It's still the same.
Okay.
Yeah. Let me try increasing the gain of the microphone and see whether it helps.
Okay. Great.
Does this work better? Does this sound better?
At the moment, it does. I think it's kind of like goes down when you're speaking for a long sentence kind of thing, and it comes down a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't want to increase the gain too much because I'm just concerned that it might actually overload the sound. Yeah, but
okay.
Yeah, this is okay. Then let's stick with this.
Okay, that sounds good now. Okay, yeah. So we'll cut out that part, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, Terrence, I think that you shared one really good lesson there about looking back at your wins, right? That help you to propel yourself and to become more successful. In this case, it's your transition from MLM, engineering to MLM. Then you think, well, why can't I transition again? And I think so many people forget about their wins and like they just don't take that into consideration. And they're like, if they hit a failure, they're like, you know, they're only in the moment of failure and they forget about their previous wins. Do you find that common in your community as well? And how are there any other strategies to help them to overcome setbacks apart from looking back at your wins?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of my community members, they come from all walks of life. And you're right, some of them, in quite a large number of them, they do actually experience this where, you know, when they actually experience setbacks, they tend to tell themselves that, hey, you know, this is no longer possible for me to achieve success in this area. You know, maybe this is not for me. You know, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. And for me, I'm always you know, trying my best to be able to motivate them, trying to be able to pull them out. But one of the things which I always tell them that ultimately, you know, this is your life. And, you know, if today is the very, very last day of your life and you're actually lying on a bed, you know, about to leave this world and you look back at your life, what are some of the things that you wish you could have done or some of the things you wish you could have done better? Okay. And I always get them to do this exercise. And when they actually write it out, then I tell them, well, these are exactly the things that you should be doing. And you should actually do them now because we only have one shot of life, or rather we only have one shot at life. Okay. Because you only live once and you don't want to be in a situation whereby you are leaving this world and you have lots of regrets. For me, when I leave this world, I want to leave this world knowing that I've done the right things. I've impacted millions of people. I've left a legacy and people remember me for all the good I've actually done in this world. Yeah. So this is something which I always share with my community. The other exercise which I share with my community members is something a little bit more radical, but I always believe that, you know, in our journey towards success, right? A lot of people focus too much on the how. They focus on how I can actually be successful. For example, in digital marketing, they focus on how to run good Facebook ads. They focus on how to run good YouTube ads. They focus on copywriting. They focus on the, you know, design elements. They focus on all these various things. But before you get into the how, I always believe that the why is more important because if you don't have the why, you can't be bothered to figure out the how and you won't have the perseverance to figure out the how. So to me, the why is like the fuel of your vehicle. You can't go far unless you have that fuel in your fuel tank. And having that why, having strong reasons why you must be successful, why you must have a certain income level, why you want your family to have a certain level of, you know, luxury or certain level of comfort. These are all things that you need to know. And most people go through life without even knowing that. Sometimes I tell my community members to do this exercise, which can be very radical. I tell them to write 300 reasons why they must be successful in life. And some of them give me this face. They say, Terrence, I can't even think of five. How you ask me to write 300? I say, exactly, because you don't have enough reasons. Imagine you want to drive from Singapore to Kuala Lumpur and you are only doing that with maybe 1/4 tank of petrol. How are you ever going to get there? And some of them actually realize, hey, that's actually true. So if you don't have enough reasons in life to be successful, you don't have that motivation, you don't have that drive, you don't have that fuel, forget about thinking about how, because every time you hit an obstacle, every time you hit a rut in life, you're just going to tell yourself, you know what, maybe I should just give up. Maybe this isn't for me. Maybe I should go back to my comfort zone. Yeah. So that's something which I tell my community members and it's really helped so many of them.
Wow. That was inspirational. I mean, that was good enough to get you elected as the US president, I think. I mean, yeah, and also very practical jokes aside, right? I mean, 300 reasons why you need to be successful. Dang, that's like, okay, we need to do it now, right? There's no more slacking off.
Exactly.
Yep.
All right. Exactly.
All right. So you listeners out there, write 300 reasons as you're listening to this and I'm sure you have enough for you to move forward. All right. So the other thing I want to ask, Terrence, is that, you mentioned that you looked at your strengths before you kind of got into this whole, you know, speaking thing, right? Yeah. How does someone know whether they're suitable to, you know, be a coach or a speaker or whatever they choose to? And how would you go around, you know, assessing that strength or finding the strength?
That's really a very good question. I guess a lot of people, they look at the coaching industry, the speaking industry as a very lucrative industry. And don't get me wrong, it is a very lucrative industry. You know, being a trainer, being a coach, being a speaker, it's definitely something that's very lucrative. It's something that actually does, you know, generate a lot of income, it pays the bills, etc. But I think more importantly is you have to reach inside yourself and ask yourself, why is it you want to be a coach? Why is it you want to be a speaker? Why do you want to be a trainer? Why do you actually want to mentor people? Because I always believe that whatever business you do, not just in the coaching industry, there's two very important things. One is what I call authenticity, authenticity. In other words, you have to be authentic. Yep. And the other one is what I call congruency. So you have to be congruent. In other words, what you think in your head, you know, what you feel in your heart and what you actually vocalize has to be in one line with each other. It has to be all in line. So a lot of people, when they go into the coaching industry, maybe in their head, they're thinking, hey, I want to be a coach because it makes a lot of money. Okay. It brings in a lot of income. And because they think that way, it actually allows them or makes them feel that way. And when they feel that way and they think that way, when they actually vocalize their words, even if they follow exactly the same script as somebody else, it actually creates this energy that the recipient can actually feel. I think some of you have probably resonated with what I'm actually saying, where you maybe attended somebody else's webinar or maybe have attended a training session and you feel that the speaker, all he wants is your money. All he wants is for you to actually part with that amount of money. Okay, but you've probably also attended other webinars or other training sessions where you really feel that the speaker has your interest at heart. Yeah. Mm. So before anybody were to consider becoming a coach or trainer, ask yourself, what's the real reason that you actually want to go into the coaching or speaking industry? If it's just for the sake of money, let me tell you, you will never go very far because people can smell you from a mile away. But if your real reason is because you want to make a difference in people's lives, you know, you want to impact more people, you want to build a community of successful people, you want to actually be able to build a mastermind alliance, you want to be able to help as many people to achieve a certain level of success as possible, people can feel that because you are congruent. The way you feel, the way you actually have in your head and the way you vocalize it all in line with each other, people can feel it and that draws people to you. It's an attractive force and people will actually be attracted to what you're doing.
And that's why you can be doing this for 20 years and still doing it and still loving it.
Exactly. Because I don't look at it as work. I look at it as something that I enjoy doing, you know, something that, yeah, you have to enjoy what you're doing. You can't look at it as work. The moment you feel that it's work, you know, then it becomes a chore.
Yeah, agreed. Now, Terrence, you also mentioned you got multiple pies, multiple fingers and multiple pies, I should say. And like you have investments into various brokerages and all that kind of stuff. So I think for a lot of coaches, that could be something to aspire to. But why did you start investing in these partnerships? And what are some of the benefits and what are some of the things to watch out for in this, such partnerships?
Good question. So for me, I'm somebody that always am keen to be an equity partner if the business resonates with what I actually believe in, you know, it's in alignment to my belief system. And, you know, along the way, I've actually met a lot of great partners in the industry. You know, I know friends who are major shareholders or brokerages. I know friends who are CEOs, you know, vice president level or even regional heads. And when I actually talk to them, I realize that some brokerages, they really believe so much in what they're doing and they really want to actually make the trading world a better place for clients in general. Whereas some brokerages, they are just out to actually make money from their clients. And when I actually find brokerages where they really, really want to make a better trading environment for their clients, that's where I realized that it's actually in alignment to my belief system. And when I get to know the owners a little bit better at some point in time, I will actually broach this question on whether there can actually be a collaborative partnership and even an equity deal in play. Yeah, because I always believe in expanding my portfolio. And, you know, if this company, I see that there is actually a potential for growth and I see that, you know, they're actually on an uptrend and more importantly, their belief system is in alignment to mine. I always believe that by taking a stake in a company, I can actually contribute and help the company to grow even better.
Nice. Yeah, so it's got to be win-win, obviously. You coming in, you know, you're adding value to the company and, you know, they all obviously pay you dividends or what have you. So that kind of works out for everyone.
That's right.
Okay. So Terrence, I think one of the common themes is that, you know, from today's talk, one of the common themes I find is that we talk quite often, quite a few times, we talk about money, not being a good why for, you know, whether for people in business, I think. as the mm-hmm. only reason, I guess, mm-hmm. versus maybe contribution, which is, I think, where you're more coming from, the energy you're coming from is more contribution, yeah. right? Yeah. So how do you kind of like align these two? Because obviously you can't just contribute and contribute without making any money, because that's not going to be sustainable as well, right? So yeah. how do you align this two between contribution and money? And, you know, how do you know for you anyway, in your experience, what is a good alignment?
Good question. I think the best answer I can give is something which I learned from one of my mentors, Blessinger, many, many years ago, more than 15 years ago. So, you know, Blair shared this with me. He shared that money should be a result of the right things that you do. Money should not be a direct thing that you are actually aiming for. Okay. So in other words, if you actually do the right things, money comes. And that kind of like totally changed my whole entire mindset. It gave me a paradigm shift, because before that, my focal point was always on money. My focal point was always on how much money I could make this month. My focal point was always on how much sales my team could generate this month. My focal point would always be, you know, what's the bottom line? What is the KPI? But after he shared that with me, he shared that money should be a result of the right things that you did. My focal point started to shift. My KPIs became how many people I could actually impact. You know, how many people I could actually be able to help? How much time do I spend with my inner circle team members? How much time do I spend grooming my inner circle team members? My focal point, my KPIs began to shift from being money oriented to being, how should I put it? For lack of a better word, help oriented. I was really reaching out to people, seeing how I could impact more people, whether it's actually potential clients, whether it's my community members, whether it's actually, you know, my team members. And a lot of times when I actually talk to people, I now actually don't have the notion of wanting to actually be able to extract more money from that. You know, back in my MLM days, we were all taught that when you actually talk to a person, you should be thinking, okay, how much money you can actually be able to extract from them. Yeah. But then I realized that that didn't work, because people can smell you from a mile away. Yeah. But yeah. nowadays, when I actually talk to a person, I don't even really bother about whether I can actually be able to get any money from them or to be able to do a business deal with them. My focal point is always, so how can I help you? How can I provide more value to you? I believe in this thing called the value ATM. So every one of us, right, they always have this thing called value ATM. So for example, in my recent bootcamp that was actually just done over last weekend, I was sharing with everyone that, you know, you probably heard of this before, your net worth is determined by your network. Okay. If you have the right kind of network, it basically affects your net worth as well. And when I was sharing this concept with my community members, the participants of bootcamp, I actually asked them to do a simple activity, which was to list five of the closest people you mix with on a daily basis, excluding your family members, and then write down their estimated income, and then take the average of their estimated income, and you realize that their average income is actually pretty similar to your average income as well. So everybody did the exercise, and everybody agreed that the average of that five people's income was very similar to their income. So I shared with them that, well, in other words, in order for you to be able to raise your income, you need to actually be able to network with the right people. You need to actually change the network that you're mixing with every single day. And one of my participants put in the Zoom chat, he said, the rich people don't want to network with me. And I realized that a lot of people had this thought in their head. They feel that the wealthy people don't want to network with them, and therefore they are not open, or rather they can't open doors to this kind of opportunities. And I asked him this question. I said, well, what have you done to provide value to the wealthy people so that they'll like to be able to network with you? So I shared with them this concept of what I call the value ATM. So every one of us in life, we have this thing called the value ATM, just like our bank ATM. But the thing is that a lot of people, before they even think of depositing value into the ATM, they always think about withdrawal. But think of it from your bank account. If you don't deposit a bank account, how can you make a withdrawal? So it's the same concept. You should focus on depositing value to as many people as possible. Focus on creating value to as many people as possible without thinking about how you can actually be able to get any returns from them. just focus on the value you can provide without thinking about the returns. And one fine day, you realize that when you need to make a withdrawal from your value ATM, you have created so much value to so many people, there'll always be somebody that will be willing to help you in the area that you need help in. It was something that has happened to me so many times. I just go about helping people without thinking about how I'm going to get a return from it. And one fine day when I realized that, hey, I need help in this area. Oh, this person I've helped before. I just reach out to that person. Hey, so-and-so, you know, I need help in this area. Do you think you can help me there? And boom, they just actually helped me without even thinking about it. Yeah. So ask yourself this question, you know, all the listeners here. Have you provided value to enough people? Because if not, don't even think about extracting value. You have to provide value to other people first before thinking about extracting value from them.
That is such good advice. So Terrence, I'm just curious as well, since you shifted from a money focus to a, value first focus or contributing value focus, how has that impacted your life and your business and everything else?
Well, for one, I become a much happier person because I know that I'm actually impacting more lives. I'm helping more people. I'm creating more value for people. And from a business perspective, it's actually worked wonders. It has actually allowed me to partner with the right people. It's allowed me to partner with talents, which were not possible in the past. It's allowed my business to grow by leaps and bounds. It's allowed me to, you know, be able to have business collaborations with people from countries that I never thought were possible. It's allowed me to open doors to so many opportunities that were not possible in the past.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on this front because like sometimes I just provide value and ask for nothing in return and it's quite amazing what can happen. So guys, if you're listening, definitely try it at least for 6 months and see what happens.
Yeah, agreed.
All right. Terrence, I just want to ask you because you're one of the OGs in stage selling from seminars, webinars, and events. What would be the one tip you can share to get people rushing to the table, for lack of a better word, or making more sales at events?
Well, if there's one tip that I could share, it's really about being authentic and thinking from your customer's perspective. Yeah. Again, a lot of people, when they sell from the stage, they're always thinking about, okay, how many sales can I make? And how many people will actually buy my product? But you are actually approaching it from your perspective, not from your customer's perspective. And everybody who's actually sitting there listening to you will always be tuning into this radio channel, which I call WIIFM, which is what's in it for me. So you have to convey to them very, very clearly what's in it for them if they were to actually be part of your community and they were to take up your products and services. So you have to be authentic and you have to think about how you can actually provide value for people who will be joining your community or taking out your products and services. And if you can think from that perspective, you know, you would actually be able to craft a really irresistible offer. You would actually be able to craft something that people would actually want to be a part of.
Right. So it's just about approaching it from the right place with the right heart, and then everything should fall into place.
Exactly. Because like what I said, the why is always the most important. The how can always be figured out later on. You can learn it from other people. You can find other people to help you with it. But you must first have the right why. You must first have the right starting point, the right motivation. Everything flows from there.
So what do you think of the advice that a lot of the platform selling gurus tell you, like, you know, don't provide too much value, or otherwise people won't buy your stuff because they have everything and they're going to do it themselves. What's your thoughts on that?
I don't want to, like, you know, comment too much because we're all in the same industry, and I don't want to be, you know, saying things in the way it shouldn't be. But for me, I believe in a different approach. I believe that I give as much value as possible, okay? And my bottom line is this. I'm going to show you how it's done. You know, I pull back the curtains. I show you my whole entire system. And if you think that you can actually copy my system and you can actually go and do it yourself, by all means, I'm fine with that. But I've realized that more often than not, The people that think that they can do it themselves often come back to me and say, you know what, Terrence, I can't do it myself. Can I be part of your program? Because in your program, your team member sets up everything for me. So in my program, my team members, we literally set up all the various components. We do literally all the hard work for our clients, even before they actually come for the bootcamp itself. Yeah, so I'm not too concerned about that because I'm confident of the value that I actually provide to my clients. And I know that if they were to try on their own, it's not going to be easy. The reality is that not many people would be able to do this whole entire thing. And sooner or later, they're just going to come back to me as well. So that's not something I actually worried about.
Yeah, yeah. Personally, I like your approach and I subscribe to your approach too. And that's why on this podcast, we kind of review everything as well. And you know, we're not worried because if people want to do it themselves, by all means. But sooner or later, they could figure out, this is kind of a bit hard, I need help. And they come back to you, right?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
And I think
DIY, do it yourself.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Another thing that I find is that if people who are kind of like just giving a bit of information, teasing people, I find that they get a lot of bad reviews and people talk bad stuff about them. That they just wanted to pitch me and sell me at the webinar or whatever, and they you know, it leaves a bad taste in the mouth, I think.
Yeah. I think times have changed significantly. In the past, this approach would work. But nowadays where, you know, webinars and seminars are just so prevalent, you know, there are just so many people that's actually trying to enter the space. Times have changed and the angle and the approach needs to change as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. So Terrence, thank you so much for so much value that you provided today. I am just like so grateful for you for appearing on this podcast. And for those people who listen, I am so sure they will get so much value from this as well. Now,
thanks for having me as well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great. It's just been great. And if people want to get more value from you, Terrence, where do they find you or how can they find more about you?
There's two ways. You can actually go to my personal site, which is terrencetan.com, or you can actually, if you're interested in understanding a little bit more about the program that I run, I do actually have a landing page where I actually do a webinar to talk more about the program that I run as well. So maybe what I can do is that, Terrence, I can send you the links and then you probably can put it like in your podcast or put it in the description as well. I think that'll help better rather than me giving the URL over here because it's quite a long URL.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of helpful. Yeah. So we'll have it in the show notes, guys. So make sure you follow Terrence because you can see he's a very authentically giving person. So I'm sure if you attend his webinar and check out his page, you get plenty of value from it. So thanks again, Terrence.
Oh, thanks so much for inviting me and thanks so much for having me. Really enjoyed this session.
Awesome. Okay, Terrence, before we end the recording, could you give me a short testimonial of how it was like being on this podcast? And, you know, if people are kind of considering whether they want to come on the podcast, what would you say to them?
I would say rush for it. Rush for the opportunity. I mean, it's really been an awesome experience. I really, really enjoy this conversation that we're having. And I must say that you have a way for making your podcast contributors feel really very comfortable. And you really ask the right questions to make this very, very engaging and make this very, very value driven. And I really enjoyed this whole session that we're having this afternoon. So, you know, if there's anyone that's contemplating whether they should be on this whole entire podcast with you, Terrence, I would tell them, don't just walk, run, rush for the opportunity.
Thank you so much for that.
Welcome.
Okay, I'll just stop the recording now. And-